Welcome to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates, and joining me in the studio today, Pastor Rod Zwanitzer. And special thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin. For more information about Concordia University, visit our website, kfuo.org, and look for the logo in the sponsor section. Well, this week we've been talking with military families all week, and we have another great treat today, those who are serving faithfully, military family, Reverend Scott and Mary Simpson of Fort Lewis, Washington, who are joining us today on the show. Thanks for joining us.
Hello.
It's great to have you. So tell us a little bit about where. So do we have Scott and Mary today? Is that right?
Yes. Yes. Mary's calling in right now.
Okay. We're still working out the phone lines here in the new studio. So, all right, she's on now. Great. Mary, you with us?
Yes, I am.
Great. So glad to have you both with us this morning. Looking forward to hearing about military life for you. And just want to remind our listeners, if you would like to join the conversation for Chaplain Scott and Mary Simpson, if you're in the St. Louis area, you can call us at 314-821-0850 or outside of the St. Louis area at 1-800-730-2727. Or you can email us your questions at family@kfuo.org. So welcome, Chaplain Scott and Mary Simpson. Looking forward to hearing about where you're serving. Where is it? Fort Lewis, is that right?
Fort Lewis, Washington is just south of Tacoma, Washington, out there on the west coast.
Excellent. And so what are you doing there at Fort Lewis?
I work for the Corps Chaplain with plans and operations for the base.
Excellent, excellent. So
coordinating the training for the chapel.
Great. So do you live there on base then as well?
No. We live out in town off base.
Okay. So which came first, family or which happened first? Did the family come together first, or did the military career begin?
I served in the Army for about 5 years. Then I got out of the Army completely. I married Mary, and we started seminary. So right as we started seminary is when I got married, in between summer Greek and the fall quarter.
So she married you right around summer Greek.
Yeah, right. Took a break after summer Greek, and she and I got married and got settled in to start the fall quarter. And I went, after serving in the parish for 2.5 years, was when I went back in the Army as a chaplain.
Okay, so when you started at seminary, the plan was to go back as a chaplain, is that right?
No. That came from our church's Armed Forces Committee has a great recruiting program, and they are consistent and constant and looking for people to serve in this capacity. So after I'd been in the parish for a while, I agreed to let my name be considered for a call to the Armed Forces Committee.
Great.
But I didn't have any intention of going back in the Army when I went to seminary the first time. I just thought I'd go and serve as parish pastor.
Now, when you went to seminary the first time, were there a couple of trips to the seminary?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. When I left the Army,
okay.
Seminary.
All right. And if I understand...
I just thought I was leaving the Army completely.
Now, if I understand correctly, it was a seminary at Princeton. Is that right?
That was an extra year that I did for academic training to serve as an instructor in the Army. I went to Concordia St. Louis from 95 to 99, and then served as a parish pastor, then was an Army chaplain for a while. And after that, the Army selected me to be an instructor. So there was an extra year of graduate school that I did at Princeton Seminary.
Wow. Welcome, Scott and Mary. This is Rod Zwanitzer. And it's amazing how God kind of charts our life even differently sometimes than we would have thought. Does that apply to you guys at all in this? Sounds like it. Maybe it does at some junctures in your life where maybe you thought he was going to take you down another road and he made a left turn.
Oh, certainly so. When Mary and I got married, there was no thought of me coming back in the Army. We thought we were just going to go to a small parish somewhere and stay there.
And now you have a much bigger parish, right?
Yes, much bigger focus.
So how long have you been at Fort Lewis?
Just a little over 2 years now.
Okay. And how's it going adjusting to life there?
Well, pretty well. It's a very different place from the Southeast than, you know, from the East Coast in general. The life on the West Coast is different. But it's a beautiful place and a lot of great people here to serve with.
And Mary, are you from the East Coast as well?
Actually, I grew up in Oklahoma. So whenever I met Scott, we were both in Texas. So it's while he was still in the Army, Fort Hood, Texas, is when I met him, and as he was getting out of the service. So after that, with serving, you know, moving to St. Louis for him to attend seminary, and that's about when I joined up, was in Missouri.
Sounds like that you guys are used to boxing up and packing up and moving on to another place, especially you, Scott,
not
over the years. And
yeah, I don't know that we're used to it. I do recall about 5 moves ago that I told my husband I only had about 2 more moves left in me, and he had better choose them wisely because I'm tired of packing up all the time and moving. And he said, okay, well, I better make them count. And, well, that's been 5 moves later, and so I'm still moving. And I can't say that it gets easier. Each move is difficult, but certainly the rewards are great. We have had wonderful people who have come along our side to help us toward the end and provide meals, either people from the local chapel to people in the local churches. And then it seems as we move into a new area, there's always someone here to welcome us and to assist me in getting the house all unpacked. Now, sometimes I've had to make the move by myself, as my husband's been busy with other things. So.
Sure. And children, I understand you have some children involved in this, and of course that always, you know, makes it a little more complex when you have kids involved in moves.
We have 3 children. Lydia is 17, and our twin boys, Daniel and Timothy, are 15. I can say that probably one of the things that has helped us most through all these moves is that we have homeschooled them from the beginning. So that has helped quite a bit with all of the moves and the deployments. They've had, you know, consistency with the textbooks and with the type of instruction, and of course with their nice teacher.
Sure, and that may be reduce that stress with kids at certain ages of, you know, attachments to people at school and that kind of thing. So, so Lydia, I'm pretty sure she probably likes purple as I do.
Actually, she does.
Oh, yeah, good for her.
Yeah.
So, have you noticed as a military family, you two, does it differ from let's say even what you were in the seminary community with those other families, and then when you were, you know, in the parish? Does life as a military family serving other military families, does family life differ that much from what you've observed, and maybe even Scott, what you've been able to counsel people and become aware of their needs, so forth?
There is an awful lot of stresses that are specific to the military family that, you know, people just don't generally see outside, you know, with the constant changing of who you're working with or the working environment or the additional stress of your family having to pull up and move every 24 to 30 months and totally reconstructing their lives, you know, in new locations. It's stressful for them, I think.
Yeah, that kind of, when you talk about 2 to 3 years, that could really be stress-producing because it seems like you just start to unpack the boxes, all of them, and then it's time to repack and, and move on and say goodbyes and try to find, you know, new relationships. And sometimes, Mary, it seems like that the wife might have the tougher adjustment. I know I've only been here in St. Louis for a year now, and I know for a long time my blessed wife had far tougher because I could just get up in the morning and say, have a great day. And I went to work here where I had lots of friends and lots of camaraderie and that. And she was behind trying to, you know, put together a new house and work with the contractors and the people who are coming in and helping us out. So I think sometimes children and wives can be stressed out a little bit even more.
I agree that it can be difficult. Truly, it's all in what I make of it. I choose, there are days that I choose to find joy in something that has happened that day and hang on to that and give thanks for the people who come into our lives. It is difficult, I know, for the children, even though they are homeschooled. They do make friends at their old places and, you know, with dance studios and Boy Scouts and piano teachers. And even because our children are homeschooled, they do have had close relationships that kind of multi-generational in our chapels and in the churches. So they recall some elderly organist that they were particularly fond of. And it's difficult when we move from one location to another. However, they are, to some degree, they are resilient, but they also know they have a pretty good attitude about moving to a new place. I know one of our twins is very outgoing, involved in Scouts, and is doing well in leadership positions. When we were at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, preparing to move to Fort Lewis, Washington, we remember him saying, "Oh, it's okay that we're moving." He said, "Within 6 months, I'll be running the place." So they do have positive attitudes. And truly, within 6 months, he was elected to be one of the leaders. So,
wow, good for him.
They are, and our children are used, they recall piano teachers, a piano teacher from South Carolina, and then they remember one from Germany and one in New Jersey. And so they recall all of these different places, and we've been truly blessed by the move. I can't say that, you know, there are days that are more difficult than others, and even in the midst of the military, there are days I feel lonely, even though sometimes we live in places with 20,000 soldiers. You know, there are days that the children and I feel lonely, and but I think the important part is just reaching out and connecting. But one, I want to move back a little bit. Whenever you were asking my husband about some of the blessings that have occurred to us by being moving around, and it would be something that the typical pastor and his wife may not experience. When we're at different chapels and my husband's assigned there, there are small groups of women who get together for prayer and, you know, fellowship. And sometimes it's just across the board Protestant. You never know. You know, it's a little bit of everything. Mm-hmm. But when we were at Fort Bragg, something very wonderful happened. And I can't really say it was wonderful for me. It was a blessing, even though it was in the midst of a lot of chaos. A lot of husbands were being deployed from there. My husband was being deployed. But some young wives, age 17 through about 23, had approached me. They were from, we had an LCMS worship service that was going on there, had approached me and said, "By any chance, could we have a Bible study and prayer time each week that's just for us, just for the Lutheran women?" And at the time, I was thinking, well, sure, that's what I need to do, but I have my children, I'm homeschooling, my husband's gone, I've got to take care of the two dogs and the house and the yard. However, that time I will always recall as being such a blessing, because typically you're not going to have that young set of women with young children, all with babies, want to get together, you know, for prayer time and Bible study every single week. Their lives were just as busy as mine. So that was truly a blessing.
Well, and I'm sure a blessing to their children as well. You know, what a fine example for their children to see that, too, to see their parents, their moms, you know, wanting to get together and to build one another up. What a great blessing.
And as well, Mary, I would surmise that those other women participants would feel blessed and encouraged by you taking time out to come and be a part of that. And, you know, I've felt that way, you know, over the years, and maybe you did too, Scott, at the seminary. You know, as you know, for a lot of us that are not extremely talented in picking up information and having photograph memories, as I was as an older seminarian coming second career, I was really struggling some days, you know, to say, I don't know if I can afford to go to chapel or not. I need to prepare. And boy, when I just said it's time to get in there and be with Jesus a little bit, it blessed my entire day. And so, you know, in that vein, Mary, I think that's well said. And maybe that's a good thing to not only tell all pastors and their wives, but military ones for sure, that going to that spiritual well and fortress is a place to get you through changes and you know, difficult situations.
And I think we needed, because we were all going through the same thing, it was important to us to come together. I think sometimes in a civilian parish, you have multiple families with multiple job backgrounds and different things going on, and there are some common threads. However, for the women and myself, we all were married to a man who was gone and was overseas, and sometimes we didn't know what was going on, and it really built us up to call upon the name of the Lord and ask for protection for our husbands, and to be with us as mothers, that we would raise our children as the Lord would want us to, and that we could be a support to our spouses whenever our husbands would call, that we would not just pour upon them every bad thing that happened, but instead that we could remain positive for them, because it was very difficult for our husbands while they were away not to be part of the family.
And Scott, what was it like for you during that time when you were deployed and, you know, hearing, I don't know, I'm gathering you heard about the Bible study starting and that encouragement going on.
Right. I thought it was fantastic, because the problems that sometimes come about with the families are sometimes a result of the husband and wife even growing further apart during the deployment, because the wife finds new friends, and these friends are not always good for the relationship. Sometimes, you know, the friends, you know, they want to go out and act as if they're single and not nurture the marital relationship and not build each other up in the family of Christ. But when you have half a dozen wives who want to strengthen their faith, want to encourage each other, it's fantastic, because they're drawing strength from Christ, they're strengthening each other, and they're encouraging their husbands in what they're doing overseas, and it really is a great situation.
You bring up a good point that I hadn't really thought of before. You know, when someone's deployed and their spouse is still at home, there might be that temptation to think and live like you're a single person, and you know, maybe out of resentment or out of disappointment or fear or whatever. I hadn't really thought about that before. Is that something that you think most couples experience? You know, most spouses who are left at home while their spouse is deployed.
I wouldn't go so far as to say most, but I know there are some that becomes the root cause of the problem when the family's reunited. They don't want to go back to being married. They've had a year of, oh, this is, you know, I do what I want. I do what I want when I want, and I don't have to cooperate, don't have to consult or, you know, loss of accountability to each other. And the joy of, like, the group that Mary led during my last deployment was there was this mutual accountability to each other. There was this encouragement towards being faithful spouses, a encouragement towards staying faithful to the church, and it was this mutual building up that I think all the families benefited from.
I don't know if you were aware, but yesterday we had the privilege of visiting with Colonel Jeff Williams, an astronaut, still in the program, you know, and he's been almost a year in space. And he was talking about, we were talking about this very thing about keeping touch with his wife. And he was able, through all the technology they had, to talk with her twice a day via the phone. And then they had a video, you know, site to site visit every week. And I imagine in some deployments that that's just not possible. Is that correct? That there'd be a lot of times where communication is not as often as astronaut Williams would have been able to do with his wife?
Well, as we go through this whole deployment cycle over the last dozen years or so, there has been a strengthening of our abilities, where early on there was very little ability to communicate. So, you know, your first year in Iraq, you know, going back more than a decade, there was very little built up, very little opportunity to communicate. It was almost all by written letters. You know, I had went ahead and prepared, you know, got all these envelopes and stamps and, you know, paper to write letters and stuff. And probably the first... weeks, it was all, you know, snail mail kind of stuff. No phone calls, nothing.
Yeah, I recall going 2 months without hearing from my husband at all when he first deployed to Iraq in April of 2003, or maybe it was March 2003. Yeah. And I went for 2 full months with nothing, and that was very difficult. Whereas today, I can speak to a spouse whose husband is deployed, and as you mentioned, they have, they can Skype so they can see each other. They can talk to each other twice a day. So it's very different now as opposed to what it was when my husband first deployed in 2003.
That's great.
Fast forward to the next deployment, and it was, we had phones, we had computers, we had a little MWR, morale, welfare, and recreation area that had computers where you could go in and use Skype or any number of the different social media websites, and people are, you know, or just making regular phone calls. Mm-hmm. You could do that.
That's terrific to hear that the you know, the military has, you know, kept up with the technology to allow the families to really be blessed. And so we're going to take a quick break here in a few seconds, and when we come back, we want to talk more about, you know, the life of military families. We're honored to have a chaplain and his wife on today, talk about deployment, talk about their service, talk about their families and helping other military families. And Chaplain Simpson is in the Army, so we have a little... fanfare music to salute Hugh Chaplin and all our brave and wonderful men and women that serve us and the world so wonderfully. We salute you, especially on this celebration of America this week. So stick around. We'll be back.
Concordia University, Mequon, Wisconsin, overlooks the beautiful shoreline of Lake Michigan. This serene main campus of CUW is just 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with all its vibrant cultural attractions. At Concordia University, Wisconsin, students living by the motto of Inspiration in Action can choose from 69 undergraduate majors, 14 master degree programs, and doctorates in pharmacy, physical therapy, and nursing practice. For more information or to take a virtual tour, visit cuw.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Jaa Khan was one of several well-known actors in India who star in what's called Bollywood films. But her fame and fortune couldn't make up for the unborn baby she aborted. Jaa committed suicide and left a six-page note of why she did it. Various research studies have shown women are more likely to commit suicide if they have an abortion versus give birth. The British Journal of Psychiatry reported women were 70% more likely to kill themselves. The British Medical Journal found they were nearly six times more likely. Keep in mind, Europe isn't known for being pro-life. In the U.S., the National Institutes of Health reported the suicide rate for teen girls and young women has tripled over the last 2.5 decades. It's time we realize abortion hurts women.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.
Hi, I'm Mark Hawkinson, extending a warm invitation for you to join me for Moments of Assurance each weekday from noon to 1 p.m. on Worldwide KFUO. Each day I'll share scriptural encouragement along with practical thoughts, humor, trivia, news items, wonderful Christ-centered songs and hymns. It's a great spiritual recipe for your noontime hour. So join me, won't you? That's Moments of Assurance, underwritten in part by Mid-American Coaches and Children's Christian Concern Society, an LCMS-recognized service organization.
Hello, I'm Rod Zwanitzer, Director of Broadcast for KFUO. We totally depend on the gracious supporters who want this gospel voice to continue and expand as the messenger of good news of Christ. A wonderful part of this support is our underwriters, an ever-increasing number, and so we ask you to find out who they are by checking them out on our website or as you hear them here on KFUO. Write, call, or tell them how much you appreciate their support of Worldwide KFUO.
Becoming a Worldwide KFUO Day sponsor is easy in the 21st century. First, pick a reason to celebrate, a birthday, an anniversary, or other event, and call me, Mary Schmidt, or Joni Harwell at 1-800-844-0524. For helping support the worldwide outreach of KFUO, you'll receive announcements on KFUO for a special date honoring your day sponsorship. Call us at 1-800-844-0524.
Religious broadcaster Pat Robertson has told his TV audience that God will punish the United States if the U.S. forces Israel to share control of Jerusalem with the Palestinians. His warning Monday on CBN's The 700 Club came as Israeli and Palestinian negotiators prepared to meet in Washington for their first direct talks in years.
I say it on the authority of the scripture, if the United States of America forces Israel to divide Jerusalem, God himself will come down against this nation, and what will happen will be very painful to every one of us as American citizens.
The United States has never recognized Israel's designation of Jerusalem as its capital, insisting the city's status should be negotiated by Israel and the Palestinians. The U.S. also has not recognized Israel's annexation of eastern Jerusalem, which contains sites holy to Muslims, Jews, and Christians. I'm Steve Coleman.
Welcome back to Faith and Family. We're talking with Chaplains Scott and Mary Simpson of Fort Lewis, Washington today. And if you have any questions for them or comments, I want to thank them for their service. Certainly give us a call at 314-812-0850 or 1-800-730-2727. Or you can email us at family@kfuo.org. 314-821-0850. I want to make sure I got the right number there. 314-821-0850. Well, Chaplain Scott and Mary, thanks so much for joining us today. It's been a pleasure talking with you so far. I'm really interested in hearing about daily life for you at Fort Lewis from both perspectives.
Well, here at Fort Lewis, you know, there's the morning physical training that the soldiers do, and then get some time to get cleaned up and get ready to go back to work. So you get from like 6:30 to 8. People are doing their physical training, and then 9 o'clock, people are back in the office for the checking messages and going to staff meetings and organizing stuff, and then meetings and the coordination and the meeting with soldiers and families and counseling continues till about 5:30, 6 o'clock at night, and then sometimes you get to go home for dinner and then be with your family for a little while, and sometimes not. Sometimes the things go a little bit longer, and you get home sometimes in between 7 and 8 p.m. and get cleaned up, get something to eat, and go to bed, and the whole thing starts again around 5:30, 6 o'clock next morning. That's kind of the usual daily cycle. Then there's the 2 or 3 week training events you go to where you're gone for 14, 21 days at a time, sometimes a little longer. So you're, even if you're assigned here in the States and you're not on a long-term deployment, you can still be away from your family for 2 to 4 weeks at a time with the training with your unit.
In that kind of a schedule, Scott, do you conduct any worship services for the fellow soldiers or Bible studies? Yeah. Are you involved in any of that?
Right. Joint Base Lewis-McChord has a full religious support plan run by the First Corps chaplain and the Joint Base chaplain, where there are 19 to 20-some worship services a week, even more Bible studies throughout the week. So as a unit chaplain, there's several Bible studies ongoing right now on base, and I assist Chaplain Mark Moss, another one of our Missouri Senate chaplains, with leading a worship service on Sundays. And I'm not currently leading a Bible study right now, but I have led an ongoing Bible study at my unit for a few years. We would meet every Thursday at lunchtime and get together for about an hour and work through one book of the Bible we would pick, and we go through that verse by verse throughout the week, and we get to the end of Ephesians chapter 3 and stop there, and then the next week pick up again at chapter 4 and just keep on working through it until we finish that book. And then at the end of that book, we all kind of take a vote about which direction we wanted to go to, and maybe pick a book in the Old Testament and work through that. So like at Fort Bragg, we had a great program where aside from the time I was gone on deployment, I led a Bible study there for 3 years there at the unit. One of the conference rooms, we just used that every week and had 15, 20 people every week. It wasn't always the same 20 people, but we usually had about that.
Now, were those Bible studies just for the servicemen and servicewomen, or for their families as well?
Typically during the week, it was just the servicemen and women. But then on Sunday mornings, I led another Bible study right after the service. And that was spouses and older children. And the service ran away.
Was there coffee and donuts?
Of course.
Okay, so it was Lutheran then. Okay, that's good.
That's right. And then, during the week, we also have the Department of Army civilians that work with us are always welcome to join. And mm-hmm. especially at Fort Bragg, we had several DA civilians that were part of the Bible study as well.
Great.
So what was what's a chaplain in the military's daily life like, Mary? With he sounds like he's pretty active. He's pretty busy, and even these, you know, 2 to 4 week, being away, then with children and homeschooling and all that. What's your normal daily life cycle like?
Well, we try to keep things on routine. It helps a lot with my husband needing to pop in and out from time to time, you know, come home, shower, get clean clothes. So I try to keep everything else around the same. So there's school in the morning. And for Lydia, we homeschooled her, and starting last fall, she went right into a local college and started taking classes there, which has been a blessing for all of us that she's excelling. But it means getting her up and getting her to class if she hasn't tried yet, and then coming back and teaching the boys, then going to pick her up, coming back, and then she is also included in a couple of our other studies here at the house. Lunch, which I... as a homeschooling mom, I always take my own lunch time off. So since they were around 7 and 8 years old, I taught them how to make a few things, and they have been in charge of preparing lunch for all 3 children, and they just rotate. And I have my lunch hour off, which has really given me quite a break, which I need with all the other busyness.
Sure. So you can go to the faculty lounge, huh, and get away.
That's right. That's what I should do. It's helped quite a bit. And then I try to touch base with Scott by a phone call or a text message from time to time. It doesn't always work every day because we like to stay in contact. And then the afternoon is here, and they are working independently on their schoolwork. Then there's piano, dance, scouts, which usually, even though Scott has a very busy schedule, he's also very active in volunteering with the Boy Scouts. He always has since our boys were little tiger cubs and when they were 5 and all the way now. So he's still very active, and he takes them there. And then with Taekwondo and all of these different activities that the children have going on. So it's typical. It's very important to us to have meals together, and typically it's dinner time, whether it's the typical dinner time at 6 or if I call and he's on his way. Sometimes we'll say, no, go ahead and eat. But the children really prefer to wait for him. And if it means the meal is a little cold, they'll do that. So that's very important to us as a family, that we are able to get together for that. And on weekends, when he's not otherwise busy with the military, we truly work hard at ensuring that our relationship is tight, we're able to talk if there's anything going on that we need help with. Scott also has family game night every Sunday evening, so if anybody's ever in the area and you want to come by and play a Monopoly or a card game, he has family game night every Sunday evening, which is very good. It's games, but it's also a time for the teenagers to talk about things that are going on for them. That's our typical day and what our weekend looks like. On Sundays, my husband can be preaching on post at the chapel. Also in this area, every place we've lived, there's also civilian pastors, LCMS pastors, who need a week off here or there, and so he'll do pulpit supply. And that's what he's able to do here also. So if he's doing pulpit supply close by, I go. If he's doing pulpit supply a distance away, which means leaving the house at 5 o'clock, I usually go to a local church here in town. That then finishes up our week, and then we start it all over again.
Well, it sounds like you have the perfect children. They make their own lunches, give mom lunchtime off, and they go to family night or game night on Sunday night, and they wait for dad for supper. You have the perfect children. How did you get that?
Well, if we could just work on them folding clothes and getting them into the drawers instead of just throwing them on their beds and then wanting them back up on the floor.
If that's your biggest battle.
That would really be great if they could do that.
Mary, I wanted to ask you this. I know as a parish pastor myself, and you and Scott have had that experience, and then, you know, now a chaplaincy, which is a little different. But as a pastor's wife, I know that a lot of times, you know, it's frustrating for me and my wife that I would come home after a long day and maybe even night, and my wife would start inquiring, as a good wife would, you know, how was your day? And what, you know, where were you most of this night? And I'd say, well, I was counseling. And she might early on say, with who? And I'd say, I can't tell you. So much of what I was doing, I couldn't tell her. And I wonder, even with the wife of a military chaplain now, if that confidentiality is even, you know, up a notch or so, that a lot of times, you know, pastors and maybe chaplains can't share everything that's going on in their in that part of their life. And that can be difficult on both sides.
I think it could have been difficult for me. I don't know. I was there at his ordination when I heard him verbally state, he took a vow to take confessions to his grave. And so I had never inquired from him what's going on with the family, and especially with the military and security clearances and everything. There are items and meetings that he attends and things that he sees when he's away that he is not to share. I honor that. As a wife, the one thing that I can offer to him more than anything, besides support, is also the support to help him maintain that confidentiality that I've witnessed him vow to God that he would keep. So I do not question him. I know that he has a very busy life. I know that he's quite busy with quite a few things, but if he chooses to tell me something, it's something that's not confidential and something that maybe so-and-so's wife had a baby and maybe they could use a meal, or I'd love to make baby blankets for new little ones, you know, things like that. Or maybe so-and-so's going through a hard time because, you know, husband was just deployed, but past that, no. It's better for me to not inquire.
Well, that's just a great answer, Mary. I love that, you know, that you really nailed it with, I heard him at his ordination vows swear that confidentiality. That's just excellently put. Thanks for that.
And it takes a lot of trust, too. You know, it's apparent there's a lot of trust in your relationship, that you trust him to live out his vocation and to serve as a chaplain and to be faithful as a husband, too. So that takes a lot of trust.
And one other thing that he didn't mention that he does, he has regularly held, I mean, at this particular job that he's in now, it's more of a staff position, and he doesn't need to, doesn't have as much hands-on with leading some of these conferences, but I have attended his marriage retreat that he leads for soldiers and their wives, and I truly must say he practices what he preaches, and he has given, you know, the soldiers a challenge, you know, to remain faithful, and that their wives will need to have a place of honor in the relationship. And I've witnessed that, and he truly, he's a good man. You know, he lives by the words that he gives to others, and so I'm truly blessed. And he makes it a point to ensure that here at home, even if he's away, that we have the necessary tools for evening prayer and when the children were a lot younger for studying the catechism. One time before he deployed, it was a different time before he deployed, the children were young and he was still teaching them the Lord's Prayer and the Ten Commandments. And this is when you could still buy blank cassette tapes. He recorded 355 days of Bible study, Bible stories for the children. And he also made a tape that had the morning and evening prayer, a different tape with the Lord's Prayer and the Ten Commandments, and another one for the Apostles' Creed. It was a little bit like a disc jockey through the day. But we had a picture of him on the table, and I would put those tapes in for the children. And when he was recording them, he would stay up late after we had all go to bed, and he would make all these tapes for us. And after all, and the kids were 4 and 5, I believe, at the time, and now they're 15 and 17, almost 16 and 17, they still love to hear those tapes that their dad made for them. So truly, he's a man of God who wants to ensure that even though he's away, that his family that he's still leading his family spiritually. And I must say that that probably is one of the best gifts he could have given to us.
Wow. That's truly impressive, Scott. And, as Mary said, that, she's heard the evidence when you do these retreats with these other soldiers, that your advice is, you not only talk the talk, but you walk it as well. And that's fascinating. Now, is there anything else you can share when you do these retreats, what you might offer to the military families that you talk with at these outings?
Well, a lot of it has to do with the simple guidance that Dr. Luther gives us when he says in the Catechism that it's for the head of the household to teach his family. And it's encouraging the husbands that they're supposed to be the spiritual head of the family, and that it's their position, their vocation, to make sure their children know the Lord's Prayer, that they know the Apostles' Creed, that they know the commandments, that they understand what it means to live as a Christian in our society. And bringing a spiritual, religious element to these marriage enrichment training events that the Army provides is very important. The system and the program is very strong in the Army. It's one of the few organizations in our country that invests a lot of time, effort, and money towards making sure that the soldiers and families have the communication tools and have the instruction on how to develop that trust and develop that communication skill set to where they can work through their problems and be good parents and productive spouses and have a mutually supporting, productive relationship. And the Army is great about doing that. The Army puts a lot of effort. The U.S. Army Chaplain Corps puts hours and hours a day all across the Army towards making sure that these programs and these training events build up our military families' relationships so that when there is a deployment or there are multiple training events where the family is separated, that their relationship is strong enough to endure.
And I can only imagine how that would strengthen our Army, having that strong foundation at home, having a firm faith can only make you stronger in your duty and in your service too.
Right. The resiliency that the Army has been focusing on over the last few years in building that up, not only for the soldier but also for the family, is based on the idea that soldiers are recruited and they volunteer to become soldiers, but you have to retain the family as a whole. And if you don't strengthen the family, you're not going to be able to keep good soldiers in, because people are going to leave because their families aren't being taken care of. And when you deploy and you're in harm's way, you need to have the soldier focused on the task at hand so that he can help defend the soldiers to his left and to his right, as opposed to being worried about what's happening at Fort Hood, Texas, or Fort Benning, Georgia. They have to be focused on the task at hand.
Right.
If they're worried about what's going on with their family, then they're distracted, and that can be very dangerous.
They have to know what they're fighting for, who they're defending. They're, protecting us and the families back home. And if they know that family's being taken care of, I'm sure it's a you know, makes it a little bit easier to serve and to be faithful in your daily calling and your daily vocation. So,
that's right.
And I have to say amen to you, brother, for being faithful to the promise you made at the font with your children in there at their baptism. What a blessing to hear another father who is living out and carrying out that duty of teaching and instructing his children. I myself am a new father, expecting our first child in September, and so to hear,
congratulations!
Thanks. We're very excited to hear of a dad who spent all that time, preparing, investing that time to teach his children the Word, recording all those cassettes, it's obvious what a great gift that is to your kids, and how they cherish that, and certainly how that's going to impact them and their families in the future as well. I have to ask, who obviously someone impacted you, someone mentored you. Who are those people who played a role in shaping your faith and mentoring you?
Well, there's a list of a few here. Let's see. I have to admit that the execution of the tapes and recording the catechism for the children to help learn and memorize and commit to memory, I did all that work, but the idea was Mary's. That she said, hey, you're going to be gone all this time. We really need to, you've started this, but we need to be able to continue it while you're gone. So she had a great idea with that.
Behind every great head of the household is a great wife, right?
That's right.
Martin had Katie, and you have Mary.
Yeah. So let's see. There's three other guys I think I need to mention. There's Chaplain Jonathan Shaw, who is the senior chaplain at Army War College at Carlisle Barracks in Pennsylvania. Over the years, he has been a great sounding board. Jonathan has been there to guide me in how to be a faithful chaplain in the Army while still being faithful to our church's doctrine, our practice, the Book of Concord, and our confession of faith. That he's been a great model for that. Pastor Bernie Shea in Copper's Cove, Texas, at the Trinity Lutheran Church there in Copper's Cove. During our first deployment to Iraq, he was very supportive of the family. He was a great model of a local civilian pastor who reached out and supported the families, who helped with them and made sure that they had the things they needed. And he took the time to write maybe every month or every other month a quick note about what was going on at the parish, and a quick devotion, and hey, I preached about such and such this last week, and here's some thoughts about the scripture, and mailing those letters to me and other soldiers that were part of the congregation back there in Texas was very supportive.
I can imagine.
It was one of those things where you're like, here's a guy, he's, thousands of miles away. He's a parish pastor, you know how busy he is. But he's taken the time to write and mail all these letters to the soldiers who are deployed from his congregation.
Well,
and guys like him and Mike Ramming, who was a Naval Reserve chaplain, but another pastor in the Texas district and then in the Southeast district in Virginia. He was a great example.
Well, thank you. All those are great examples. I'm sorry we're out of time today, but what an amazing story to hear from Chaplain Scott and Mary Simpson of Fort Lewis. An inspiration to us all. Thank you for your service and your time.
Amen. We appreciate you and blessings, and we got exciting guests tomorrow, Andy.
Tomorrow, Reverend Greg Williamson, LCMS Chief Mission Officer with Rod Zwanitzer.